Hello, listener. Welcome to yet another episode of the Zeitgeist Tapes, in which me, Stephen Fielding, and Emma Burnell. Hello, Emma.
Hiya.
So both of us discuss usually something, a film, a TV series, occasionally a novel. I don't think we've discussed an opera yet, have we?
Sadly not.
No, we're not that highbrow. But we discuss these various cultural artifacts, if we wish to be posh and pretentious about it, and in relation to politics, what they might be saying about politics. Some of them are very obvious, but what they might be saying about politics, and some of them are a bit more less obvious, such as, for example, Dirty Dancing.
Very political film.
Which is one of our more popular podcast listeners, as you will undoubtedly know. So this month we're going to talk about Parks and Recreation, which you might have heard of, not because it's been on British TV. It's now on Amazon Prime.
It was on British TV, but it was shunted around their schedules like mad.
And they only did like the first one or two series, didn't they? They didn't. I mean, it was on BBC Two at odd times.
Yeah.
So it kind of really wasn't run seriously.
Yeah.
But Parks and Recreation, if listener doesn't know, was a very successful American sitcom, and unusually for a really good American sitcom, it was actually broadcast on one of the networks rather than HBO or Netflix or something else, And so it got quite a big mainstream kind of an audience. And it's about as the title implies, it's about a parks and recreation department in the small Indiana town of Pawnee, which is used as a kind of, I guess, a kind of parody of Middle America, isn't it?
Yeah.
And it focuses on the work colleagues in that department. The central character of which is Leslie Knope.
My spirit animal.
Yes, which I was about to hand over to Emma to because she channels that a bit more than I might, the Leslie Knope character. Just to explain to our listener who Leslie Knope is.
So Leslie Knope is a public servant in the really traditional meaning of that. She genuinely has dedicated her life to public service. She's ridiculously enthusiastic about it. She loves her city. She grew up there. It's everything that she cares about and believes in is about giving back. And what I love most about Parks and Recreation is it is possibly the least cynical program made about politics ever, and it has plenty of cynical jokes in it, but at its heart is a dedication to believing that public service is a good thing, and Leslie Knope absolutely personifies that.
Yes, and that makes it sound really worthy, doesn't it? But it isn't.
It does make it sound really worthy, yeah. And it does all that without being all saccharine and worthy.
Yes. I mean, it's a situation comedy about local government in Middle America, isn't it? And, you know, off the bat, you'd go, well, that sounds a bit dull or worthy. And yet it isn't at any point. I mean, I think it kind of loses it towards the end of its run. But then again, it ran for like, I think, seven seasons. And interestingly, because I did Wikipedia this, its run actually embraces Obama's two terms. So it starts in 2009 and it ends in 2017. Just checks notes, and I think that is part of the context for it, because I think they're quite overtly, the makers overtly, I think, aimed to make something more hopeful about politics, and also politics during a period of austerity, and when, you know, people were suffering a little bit, and just making a positive case for public service and the possibilities of government.
And that, absolutely. And they also have the other side fully represented. They have Leslie's boss, Ron, who is a libertarian and believes there should be no government at all, really. And he is as respected a character as she is. It's not a case of, you know, they're not at loggerheads. They will disagree regularly, but they're not at loggerheads. And that's, you know, they have this respectful disagreement over their different visions. And that's what's so fascinating about it.
Yeah, she's kind of active government in a progressive Democrat Hillary Clinton-ish kind of a way, because of course this is all before Bernie Sanders and all of that. So it's kind of, she's kind of a mainstream Democrat, I would have thought. And then you've got Ron Swanson, who, according to, you know, the plot, he's her boss, but he's only working in local government to ensure that local government never does anything because of his political beliefs. And yet somehow or another, in a crazy way, they all find respect for each other, don't they?
And you have all the bureaucracy, all the intransigence, all the laziness represented, but ultimately things do get done.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think it's in the first two seasons, isn't it? It starts with there's a pit. There's a big pit, which is completely useless and nothing's being done to it. And Leslie Knope makes it her mission, and you know, to overcome all of these different barriers, to turn that pit into a park,
yeah,
which she does, I think, at the end of the second season. And mm-hmm. I mean, just to demonstrate what you can do. And I think you're right. It does, on the way, it shows all the things that get in the way of actually being able to do something. And yet she manages to do it.
Absolutely.
So that's kind of the message, really.
It's a fundamentally optimistic show, which is sometimes maybe harder to watch now because we're not really in an optimistic moment.
Mm.
But I think it's really important because so much of what you and I watch and discuss, and we did Yes Minister last month, is cynical to a degree that is unnecessary. And we only ever really see in art that cynical view of politics. And so actually, Parks and Rec for me is a really important restorative of that balance.
Mm. I mean, you're absolutely right. It's of its time, but it also, there's no, but it's also, because I was thinking, could this ever have been made in Britain? Because I mean, a lot of American political fiction is quite cynical, apart from when they're going about, talk about the president. Mm. But in Britain, it's unreservedly cynical, isn't it? Yeah. It's hardly ever anything that's optimistic. And so the idea that you could go pitch an idea to the BBC and go, it's about local government, it's about a can-do woman, you know, they do things, it's all positive. No, I just don't. I think they wouldn't commission it because they'd go, because, well, everyone's cynical about politics, so no one's going to watch it. And yet in America, which is not, you know, they're quite cynical about politicians themselves. It's kind of remarkable. Like I said at the start, it was on NBC. It was on a network. Mm. It wasn't kind of squirreled away on HBO or one of those kind of pay-per-view things which only liberal, university-educated white people, you know, watch. This was a mainstream situation comedy. That makes it even more remarkable. I mean, the fact it's really, really good too makes it doubly remarkable, I think, and very, very clever. Lots of clever jokes.
Absolutely. I mean, I know we're focusing in on this discussion on season four,
yes,
but it is worth saying that if you start from season one, it does take a little while to find its feet.
Yeah.
But it is well worth persevering with. And season two, I think, is when it really hits its stride. And you get the new addition of the city manager, Chris Traeger. And, of course, Ben Wyatt, the accountant.
Yes. And, of course, this is where the Venn diagram with the West Wing and Parks and Recreation, you know, with Chris Traeger being Rob.
Rob Lowe. The lovely Rob.
So it deals with politics in a very positive way. I mean, you know, there are lazy councilmen. I mean, some of them really deeply cynical.
Lazy and corrupt as well. I mean, Jam
is
a deeply, deeply corrupt councilman.
You've been jammed. But it also deals with various issues which for contemporary America would, you know, which are deeply political. Like you said, the second season is when it kind of takes off. And the first episode of the second season is the episode which I remember more than most, which is when Leslie Knope, wanting to promote the zoo, Pawnee Zoo, they do cute little weddings and birthdays for the animals. And she marries two penguins. And she doesn't realise that both of them are male. And then this becomes a whole gay marriage thing, where where there's a sort of citizens group about defending the family, and they demand that she has to resign because as a state employee she shouldn't take a position. And then she's embraced by the Pawnee gay community, of which she's completely oblivious until that moment, because she's a hero. And it raises the issue, and it kind of echoes the serious politics of all of that gay marriage, and makes it seem ridiculous. Yeah. You know, so it satirizes it in the classic way. It holds up an issue to ridicule.
Yeah, and it doesn't make gay marriage seem ridiculous. It makes the culture war around gay marriage.
Yes.
Seem ridiculous.
Oh no, absolutely. Yes, it's not. It doesn't make. Yes, absolutely, because it's a liberal kind of inclined show. So, but it takes on real contentious issues in the United States, and deals with them for a mainstream audience.
Yeah.
Which again makes it even more remarkable.
Yeah, absolutely. And it just has so many characters that defy the stereotypes that you would expect to find them in. The Ron, the libertarian, is probably one of the strongest feminist men on television.
Yeah.
You know, he has very strong beliefs that everyone should be self-sufficient, and that, yeah. So the way that he's dealt with it is extraordinary. The cynical youth, as represented by April,
yeah,
who scratched the surface and actually she cares very deeply about things.
Mm.
And then the disaffected youth in Andy, who ends up, you know, finding his niche in children's entertainment.
Yeah. And they've got the pure individualists who are just interested in consumption and buying things and, you know, just making loads of money.
Treat yourself.
Yes. Oh, yes. Yeah. And so yeah, it's, not all the characters are overtly political, really,
no.
Are they? But
no, and then that they're overtly human is what they are. And,
yes.
And in many ways, that's one of the most revolutionary things about having a sitcom about politics with actual humans at its heart.
Yes. I mean, my favourite of the kind of second rank characters is Jerry, who it turns out that's not his real name.
Gary Gergich.
Yes.
Gary Larry Jerry.
Yeah. He's just an incompetent. I mean, everyone blames him for everything. I mean, very unfair, but he's kind of bullied. But it turns out, you know, he's a big fat guy. He's completely useless, but he's got this hot wife and these beautiful daughters and this wonderful domestic setup. So it's full of, and then there's people that keep coming in like Joe Raphael and sort of quite crazy characters who've got nothing to do with politics, but are just so well written and so well kind of performed. It's sometimes
the children,
a joy to watch.
The Battersteen children are hilarious. John Ralphio and Mona Lisa, absolutely hilarious. And they come in more and more, I think, because they're very, and of course, I don't think we could let a moment pass when we're talking about secondary characters without mentioning, you know, the town hero, Lil Sebastian.
Yeah, because Pawnee itself is so well kind of depicted, this made-up town in the middle of Indiana. And it's what's the name of the rival town that's got everything?
Eagleton,
and they hate Eagleton, yes. But yeah, Lil Sebastian is just one of those characters, which, I mean, I don't know Middle America at all, but whether it's just a completely crazy thing. It's just a little Shetland pony, isn't it, that everybody
it's
just...
a little Shetland pony that everybody loves.
That everybody loves and does literally nothing. I mean, apart from he gets a huge reaction at various points, I think, when he's on show, which is completely inappropriate. But yeah, he's just this... Nobody from outside of Pawnee can understand what the hell's going on. Until, of course, little Sebastian... also passes away.
Oh.
Yes, which there's a lovely cry. I mean, when I hear that song, I can't but cry. So we may play it as we go out, so I don't cry on
the podcast. But you are Ben Wyatt in that, because that's the exact journey that Ben Wyatt goes on. He comes in as this stranger to the town, and Little Sebastian's introduced as a character just after him and Chris Traeger arrive, and he is just baffled. But by the end, he's the one in a Little Sebastian t-shirt, you know, waving a candle with the rest of them.
Yeah, I mean, partly because he now knows that Pawnee, which is this, in some ways a terrible town. I mean, it's dominated by one company.
It's dominated by a fast food company called Sweetums, which is like everything with loads of sugar in.
Yes, and so...
And then Paunch Burger as well.
And so they're all incredibly overweight, and I think there's a diabetes epidemic as well. And they will not be told. So whenever Leslie, who herself is no fan of salad, goes, you know, tries to improve things, they're totally resistant. And to some extent, the people of Pawnee are shown to be complete idiots, aren't they? I mean, whether that's saying that about America, you know, if you're an American viewer watching that going, hang on a minute, this is a bit, I can recognise me in these fools who are manipulated by Sweetums. And watch, it's Pawnee Today, isn't it, with Joan Calamezzo, who is also one of my favourite characters.
Yours and April's. And Perd Hapley. The thing that is happening now is that I'm describing Perd Hapley.
Yes, a kind of literalist local TV newscaster who is... He was kind of cultish in how he, yes, as you just done, how he introduces things. And the media is totally unfair, isn't it? It's completely biased to anything that's progressive that Leslie wants to do. And it always backs the Conservatives and backs power in terms of Sweetums.
It backs where the money comes from, but it also backs where the story comes from. So if they can embarrass Leslie on camera, they will. There's also... somebody in the douche. I can't remember who the somebody is.
Oh, the shock jock.
The shock jock, yeah. So, I mean, there's this comment. Within the Pawnee universe, they still manage to comment on all the different bits of the media. They also have quite a sweet sort of local investigative journalist who is quite active.
Yes, yeah, yeah. Leslie's always telling her what headlines she should use to get...
Yes.
Yes.
Within the universe of Parks and Recreation, they managed to actually critique, you know, in this small town, small government, they critique government and the coverage of government and the relationship of corporate money to government, all within this, you know, quite little sort of 25-minute long episodes of sitcom.
Yeah. I mean, shall we play, Les, before we talk about the season four and the election, which is kind of quite a central thing. Should we just listen to what Leslie... It's kind of a credo for Leslie, isn't it? Just so our listener will know where she's coming from.
So, yeah, this is the speech that Leslie gives. Spoiler, this is the last episode of season four where she has just been told that she's won the election and she's about to make the speech.
And with hard work and positivity, a group of people can make a difference. During my term as your city councilor, I want to focus on your hopes and not your fears. I want to solve problems instead of creating friction. And I will work hard every hour of every day to make Pawnee a better place to live. Because I love this city. And I know firsthand how very special the people of this city are. I owe this victory, all of it, to my friends and my supporters. No one achieves anything alone. So let's embark on a new journey together. Let's break out a map. Not the old, out-of-date one that shows where we've been, but a crisp, new one that shows where we might go. Let's embark on a new journey together.
See, that's quite serious, isn't it? I mean, there are those moments where she does make those kinds of comments. They're not exactly every episode, but it just brings into focus what the comedy's about, really.
Yeah, absolutely. And they undercut it. So what you can't see on this is that what is happening right at the end of that is they're putting her picture on a wall of old white dudes. And it's, you know, a real kind of breakthrough moment. And straight after that, they then do a Jerry joke just to make sure that the comedy comes right back in.
Yeah, but that whole fourth season was really about because she goes on like Tony Blair did. She goes on a journey, and she starts as a second in command in Parks and Recreation, and then in that season she stands to be city council, the first woman, as you point out, and by the end, I mean, she ends up. Is she a senator? She's been governor. She definitely becomes governor.
She becomes governor, and Ben becomes a congressman.
Yes.
But I, I think she might also become a senator later on, yeah.
About halfway through the whole run, they kind of go to Washington, and occasionally actual American politicians pop up.
Yes.
Who are, I mean, Joe Biden is obviously in it. And Joe Biden is one of her heroes.
Kind of absolute heroes. But so is John McCain. So, yeah, she's got that kind of, I like the centrists on both sides balance.
Yes. Oh, no, it's a very, I mean, you could say, you know, without fear of all the Corbynites and the Bernie bros having a go at you, it's a centrist sitcom. It's a from the left, from the centre left. Yeah. That is reflected on the kind of the politicians that turn up. But the fourth season is when she's contesting to become city councilman against Bobby Newport, who I always take as being some kind of Bush, you know, George W. Bush kind of parody, because the Newports are Sweetums, and Sweetums dominate the town. And so he just imagines all he has to do is stand to be city council. Not that he wants to do it, it's just he wants to please his father, which is a bit like George W. Bush when you think about it.
Well, it's also a bit like The Candidate, isn't it? And that movie we did a few episodes ago.
Yes. So he's a kind of sort of entitled rich guy who just thinks he's entitled to become city councilman, and he actually does. He win, or because he's so stupid he votes for her, doesn't he?
I think he may vote for her, he's certainly his first reaction to losing is, I'm so relieved, I've never been so happy in my life. Leslie's so much the better choice.
But by doing that, it kind of reveals, like you're saying in that other film we looked at, was it called? It was called Election, wasn't it, rather than Candidate, I think. But
no, Election's a different film. But it's the Campaign or the Candidate. Your favourite. You were the one who was giggling
Campaign. and it's one of string of depictions of American politics in situation comedies or films, which do demonstrate how distorted American politics is. It does show the power of money. It does show how people are manipulated by money. And obviously in this case, in fact, in all cases, just about the good guys prevail. But obviously in reality, that isn't always the way it happened.
Yeah, and the good guys prevailing. The difference, I think, with Parks and Rec and those other ones is that the good guys win and lose and win and lose and win and lose throughout. And it's never, you know, sort of black and white the way that it is. Everything's corrupt and you have to fight, punch your way through. It's far, far more interested and nuanced and layered than that. And, you know, and as you watch Leslie throughout season four develop as a candidate, you watch her, you know, come up against some of the challenges, both traditional and non-traditional. So, for example, there's always a traditional wives' bake-off Ben has to take up instead of Leslie. And some of it is quite clearly set about on some of the stuff that happened to Hillary Clinton during Bill Clinton's first contest. So the whole rolling pins thing is lifted almost directly from there. You can see that they're taking stuff that's happened in American politics, but instead of sadistically mocking, they're gently laughing along.
Yeah.
And I just find that more powerful.
Yeah, what effect it has on the people that watched it, I don't really know. Because obviously all the edges are cut off, because Bobby Newport is essentially, you know, he's a bit of an idiot. He's kind of all right, you know, he's not evil. There is one or two characters who are actually evil. The perfume guy, forget his name.
Dennis
Feinstein. Yes, he is evil, isn't he? Even Jam is evil to start with, and then he.
Jam is given more of a personality as we develop, definitely.
So it's.
But then that's actually probably true in real life.
Yes,
there are very few actually pure evil people.
Well, you've not been following Richard Bergen's campaign, have you, listener? there are some people out there on Twitter for sure who think there are the embodiment of evil.
I bet those people on Twitter are evil on Twitter. I mean, my God, we all know some people who are evil on Twitter, but you know, could possibly be quite reasonable in real life.
I mean, that's why I wonder if this could be ever made in Britain, because of its optimism that there are problems, they can be overcome, you know, if we all pull together and have the right kind of spirit and all of that. Government can help. It's not the enemy. But even the enemies of government aren't necessarily the enemies through like Ron Swanson being integrated into these schemes. But it's got, I mean, it's, you know, it's got this kind of American optimism that you can change. And it's articulated in this very particular way. But I just don't think they'd allow it in Britain. I just don't think the commissioning.
Well, I don't think they'd allow it now in America. And I think that's sad. I think that optimistic spirit has been co-opted or at least pushed into a certain type of politics now, which is being rejected from the left and the right. So I think that, and if you look at the people whose campaigns have slightly fallen away, Pete Buttigieg, for example, Pete Buttigieg is probably the candidate who's most like Leslie Knope. Elizabeth Warren, more like Leslie Knope, but with a stronger left-wing analysis. Those are candidates aren't the ones who are doing well.
Yeah, well, maybe Joe Biden himself might come out of the wreckage. Joe Biden, I mean, I always liked Joe Biden, and I think maybe it's because he pops up in things like this because he's in Community. Well, at least he isn't in Community. But Joe Biden has got this kind of persona, which lends in.
I like Joe Biden a lot. I mean, we're drifting into all the other podcasts I make at the moment. Which, if anyone's interested, primarily 2020 or Mid Atlantic, you can find all of my views on the Democratic primary on those two podcasts. Joe Biden as a cultural figure, which I think is where we could talk best about him, he's really embraced that kind of guest appearance life, and that's kept him in the public consciousness.
Yeah, I mean, he's one of the very few heroes of Leslie Knope that isn't a woman, because she's this is maybe the bit where we made the last point, really. I mean, it's quite possibly the most obvious point about the feminism of Parks and Recreation,
like a stick of rock, and then it openly discussed feminism rather than just I'm a strong woman who can do, and showing by that example. She talks about it. She talks about her feminist heroes. She talks about her feminist ideals. What she wants for April, who is basically a surrogate daughter for her. She invents Galentine's Day, which is actually a thing now.
Which is the day before St. Valentine's Day for women just to get together.
Women to get together and have their Galentine's Day, where you talk to the really important people in your life.
So that really is a thing now. It's actually spawned an actual cultural.
Yeah, people kind of talk about it now. I don't think people know where it came from, but yeah.
Yeah, so I mean, so in summary, really, if like we said at the start, you know, if you kind of described Parks and Recreation to someone that's never seen it, you know, it's about local government. It's about this woman who's obsessed with politics and using government to do, you know, good. She's a feminist. They'd probably go, bloody hell, I'm not really, you know, that sounds really dreadful. And it is, I would say, certainly as a mainstream situation comedy, I think it's one of the best. I mean, it's up there with Community and the rest of them, I think.
I watched the two of them roughly simultaneously for the first time, and it was a golden age of television for sure.
We have to go back to the past and be happy there, because the terrible, terrible present in which we live is so awful. Well, anyway, on that bombshell, maybe we should wave goodbye to our listener. So
bye, our listener.
Probably scared the listener away with that. So if you're still there, listener, this is just to remind you that this has been a Political Human production. If you wish to, on whatever platform you're listening to this, please rate us. Obviously, rate us very highly when you do. And thank you to Lord Stuart Wood for our opening theme tune. But I'm assured by our producer that we'll be played out with the Little Sebastian song, which I will have to get a hanky now if I'm going to listen to it.
Up in horsey heaven, here's a thing. You trade your legs for angels' wings. And once we've all sinned, learn and leap and you learn to fly.